مارك السهابة The Voice of أهل السنة والجماعة.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. مفتي حسن علي سليمان, hope you well this morning.
وعليكم السلام. الحمد لله, things are fine, health is fine, weather is fine. Pakistan's in the bad. Tomorrow is Yom Azadi, the Independence Day. They got freedom from the British. And so a big holiday tomorrow.
What a big
and, tomorrow's Thursday, and Friday is Arbaeen. It's the 40 days of the Shias, you know, mourning Hussein radiallahu anhu. So that's on Friday. So we have Thursday and Friday are official holidays, and then we have Saturday and Sunday. So most people have a 4-day weekend.
And so this is for everyone, whether you Shia or not, for the whole country.
Yeah, because we're Pakistani. It has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with your citizenship of this great country.
Because I thought this on an official level, like when you're speaking of the government and the rest, there is not so much of recognition when it comes to the Kufar Shia.
Well, there's not too much. Well, there's not talk about religion in politics, except for the,
but the holiday is still
religious parties.
Yeah.
Like Maulana Fazlur Rahman, his party is a religious party. So then there's talk. And even then, the people who are now part of that party will, if they're against the particular bill, they'll say that we shouldn't include religion in politics. So no, this country, you cannot say anything about Shia, because the founder was a Shia. So there's a problem. They try to hide that. All right, Muhammad Ali Jinnah was a Shia. So how do you gonna say bad things about them?
Yes. I saw you sent us an interesting message. Perhaps I read it out to encourage many other women folk here in South Africa. I'm not sure where would this fit in the topic somewhere, but it's quite inspirational. So it says, in an extraordinary act of sacrifice and compassion, a Saudi woman in Taif has donated 80% of her liver to her husband's second wife, ending her long struggle with kidney failure. Noura Salim, and she is the first wife of Majid Balda, and she stepped forward to save her co-wife Taghreed Awad Asadi, who has endured years of dialysis. The gesture has been widely hailed as a remarkable display of humanity and unity within the family. She came like rain to revive barren deserts. And Araki said, praising his first wife's life-saving gift. Now, this here comes beautifully, and I'll tell the listeners where does this fit in. It comes in beautifully because here in South Africa, it is called Women's Month. So here is something inspirational for the woman, that she gave her kidney to the co-wife just to save her life and to she can get some good health. So let me tell you why you may not find this. You're probably wondering what's the whole, because generally amongst the women, or you, when they say it's Women's Month or Ladies, Females Month, or Females, Women's Last Week was Women's Day, it generally means that a woman cannot have a co-wife. So this breaks it nicely to say that Islam allows it, the Quran allows it, you should also allow it. But it's a different story where men cannot manage it. That's a different story.
Yeah, I noticed in that report, though, there's nothing really, you know, religious about it. Okay, they made it like a humanitarian thing. I wish they had we played that up a little bit more, because that is definitely an exception and not the rule. The women, the co-wives, are definitely not friends of each other. They're enemies of each other for the most part, in most situations. I wish they had played that up a little bit more about the religious aspect in Islam.
I think you do have experience with this.
No.
Okay. So now I'm just.
I've never had two wives at one time, and I've never had one or a girlfriend or anything like that donate a kidney or a liver or anything else.
Minus the liver and kidney parts, but just co-wives on that aspect, because I think in these Arab countries they've got it under control. Like they grow up like this, and it's pretty general. When we were in Palestine, that was in 2013, then this Palestinian, he told us, when I go back now, I'm gonna look for my third or fourth wife, I cannot remember. So we said, are you serious? How do you manage with three and four? And he says, no, you're in our area, it's pretty normal. And he says that should there be any, because they live all under one roof, they have their rooms, separate rooms. But so we said, but what happens when you get into like your wives get into a fight and you're not there, cat fight, what happens then? He says, no. So he probably got them under control. So he said, no, what we do is, when there's any argument or something that is building up into an argument, then we say, and they say to one another, that we wait for the Amir to come home and we'll discuss this on the table when he comes home. So everyone can present whatever. For now, we leave it. So this is how much, I don't know if it's still like this now, but that's what he told us exactly. And we were shocked. We said, here in South Africa, where it's just dream of that idea, you'll get a shouting. So, but that's because of lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. To reject this is kufr, because the Quran Sharif allows it. So we say, and we appeal to all women, don't reject it. And we say to all men, if you can't manage, then you shouldn't even be thinking about this, which is for the bulk.
Right, exactly. You're saying that they grow up under this in Saudi, but in Saudi, all across the lines, divorces has increased, okay, a lot. Okay, so I don't think it's the same as when you saw it. Okay, UAE also, the divorce is very high, as opposed to Australia. And I just read yesterday that in Australia, non-Muslim country, the divorce is down. And it's been down ever since they came up with this new thing called no-fault divorce.
What is this?
Okay, you don't need a reason. You don't need a reason. Before, okay, my husband cheated on me, or my husband beats me, or something like that.
Yeah.
So now this, you know, they have that common expression, irreconcilable differences. So, you know, we have differences that we just can't solve. So it's nobody's fault. We just go for a divorce. Since that has been legal now, divorce has dropped. And people are staying married. Now, I don't know how you put the two together, but the non-Muslims, they've come up with things that keep their marriages together when they do marry. And the Muslims, we're not being able to do that. It's a shame, you know. But like in America, people just don't get married. So it's, you know, there's no problem with no divorce because there's no marriage. Different children from different fathers, so it's no problem.
Yeah, while we're on this topic of marriage and the youth as well, when you speak to them and you say, but why don't you want to get married now? You're 27, 28, 29, even going to 30 now. And they say, for what? And few even admitted to say, we are scared to get married because of the rates of divorce. I don't know if that's an excuse or that's just a way to bypass the enjoyment that they are living in currently, because let's face it, here in South Africa, I'm not sure about Pakistan, but South Africa, I can speak and say that if you are 30 years and you are not married, you are still living, most of the time, you're still living with your parents. And you're living under their roof. You've got food coming in because your mother is still cooking for you. You've got all your, there's no expenses for you, basically, water, electricity, nothing of that sort. So that all is fine.
Exactly.
Whatever money you're receiving is all for you spending money to do what you want. So they say to us, why should we get married? Look, on that side, there's divorce. On that side, there's so much of responsibilities. So they end up being a child for the rest of their lives. Just a grown up.
And that's how it is in the West. That's how it is in the West. Mm. Okay. You have more and more people, black and white, males at home in their mid-20s and even older. Okay. They come home and they play their video. What do you call the PlayStation and all these other things, and just watch videos and make TikTok videos and things like that. Mm. And they didn't marry. But I saw a post that said, I'm not afraid of marriage. I'm afraid of divorce.
Mm.
So this is in line with what you're saying. All right. I'm not afraid of getting married, but look at all the divorces in America when I was there. Mm. Every $2,000 per year that a woman makes, every $1,000 that a woman makes per year, okay, it increases her chance of divorce by 2%. So meaning that if a woman is making $50,000 per year, she has 100% chance of getting divorced.
Mm.
Okay. So, and that was 40 years ago. Mm. So now forget about it. There's the thing. It's not, a lot of it is, a man is going to lose when he gets divorced.
Mm.
He loses everything.
Yes.
All right. So if you have anything, why should I marry and give 50% of what I have to my wife? To my ex-wife, you know, I don't want to do that. So I'll just stay single and I can keep my money.
Yeah. So this is, it's becoming a problem because now parents have to still carry on with this. Whereas the son supposed to now take over and say, okay, I'm going to look after my parents and relieve them from a few things. But instead, you come into this comfort zone. So you just become greedy, basically. And now, 35 years, you wake up and you say, one morning, you say, hey, I need to get married. I didn't get married still. Now, who wants to marry you at that age? Another concerning aspect is, and I think few of the universities here in South Africa, they have, or at one stage at least, they put a stop to Muslims becoming doctors. So I'm not sure what's the procedure now, but I know one of my aunties, she's a doctor, and she had mentioned this to us as well, that there was this phase where they said no more Muslim female doctors, because what happens is they don't end up practicing later. So you've got to give some vow or something of that sort to give your surety that you're going to be working as a doctor and you're not going to give up your profession. So why I'm bringing this in is because females feel that let's become doctors because it's something that every parent feels proud. You know, my daughter, she's a doctor and she's got this, but we don't realize how many years has to go into this. It's a 7-year course if you're taking into consideration your practicals, the rest. We say women, men, boys, whoever, you don't put your foot on any of these brothels, these universities. You stay far away from them. We've seen with our personal ourselves eyes, and we can give you experiences of what we saw, reports of what we saw. So any scholar, anybody says, and or they cry and they say, you know, our daughters need to go to universities, we reject this and we say this is impermissible. You are putting your child into fire and you're saying, you know what, roast. And then when you're roasting, I'll come and save you, and which is never going to happen, because you need to save yourself, because you placed your child in that brothel. How many children, how many, they're not children, they are adults. How many of them lose their virginity and come out of there? We've seen people like this. They went in totally with modesty and coming out running and hugging men and things like this. But anyway, that's for another day. The fact here is
that here, it's the same thing, obviously, in Pakistan, but a little bit of different reason, because a woman, the girls here, they don't want to marry their cousin. Mm. All right, that's a big thing in Pakistan, cousin marriage. So if you do well in school and you can go to a university and you become a doctor, you'll get another doctor to marry you. And it won't be in your family. So that's the motivation here for women. Mm. If you go to almost any school, private school, and ask who's the position holders, it's always the women. All right? They're doing homework at home with the boys, come home and they just play cricket or football. But the girls, they study in school. They do their homework. They get good grades. They end up becoming doctors. And over here now, the big thing is female dentists. That's a very big thing. Yeah, but then when they do get married, unless if their husband is not a doctor himself, then chances are she's not going to continue with her practice. So, yeah, she'll just spend a couple of years looking for a husband and then leave the medical profession. So, yeah, they're pretty much the same thing here. But basically the thing behind it is to get a good husband. Mm. All right. I want to be a doctor, not to help humanity, but so I can get a good husband. I don't want to marry my cousin.
Mm. Is the just a question here. Is the reason that they do not want to marry their cousins is because of the same reason that is here, which is because we are like almost brothers and sisters. They have this mentality, which is incorrect. But is it the same?
No, not that. It's that the Pakistani man is not someone to look up to.
Okay.
So the young men, they're not someone to look up to. They'll marry a foreigner in a minute.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah.
So I would have a better chance.
So who wants to marry, you know, somebody who's, like you just said, is in his mid-20s and he's still living with his parents and he's not doing anything. So the only woman he's going to marry is his cousin.
Mm.
All right. The woman can't argue. Mm. All right. If the mother and father says this is who you're going to marry, for the most part, that's the way it's going to be.
Hmm.
The boy has a little bit of a choice, but if he doesn't have a job, if he's not really motivated to do anything, then not too many girls are going to want to marry him. So he's left with his cousin, and that female cousin, she's not happy about that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to know, because is this the same, following the same kind of idea, which... When I went to Pakistan, this was in 2010, 2011. So it was, 2011. And it was the beginning, probably like February, March, during that period. And I saw when they took me to the village, I was taken aback by this. I've mentioned this to you previously. And when my family took me to Kashmir, and they took me to Karachi, and took me to different homes, and they were really impressed with the advancement that they've made from village to now city life with a house. But I was more impressed with the village, the simplicity of it, and the beauty, the natural beauty of the village, and where it was situated, close to Abbottabad, all of this. in the mountains. That for me was something. And I said, if I ever have to move, this would be the next place I move to. That's provided our families and everyone agrees. But that was for me. But they were more impressed with themselves to say, we've moved out of that olden, backward, traditional lifestyle. And look how we've advanced. So I guess they have their reasons also. There's not much jobs there or whatever it is. But I wonder, is it the same with females as well? Like we here in South Africa, I'm not saying all, but I'm saying at least a good few people who want to reform their lives and they feel they need to get into a safe environment. They see the village as the place to be. Because you out there in the mountains, you've got your fresh produce, you've got your animals, every livestock, all of this is going for you. You're living a natural lifestyle. So I wonder, is it the same with females? Do females feel that are there? Because we always have this impression here in South Africa that Pakistanis, they are more modest, down to earth and all of this compared to this world which we're living in now in other countries in the West. Where it's non-Muslim countries, maybe you can correct us, Mufti Saab, on this particular issue.
No, that I can't. I don't know. I know people that have lived in England and America, and they've come here, and they have their villages that they go back to. The people that I see when they're men, I don't know about the women. The men, they're happy. To go to the villages, the ones that have been exposed to the West 100%. They can see the difference and they see the importance of their children being raised in the villages as opposed to London or New York or like that. But the women, I don't know. The couple of brothers that did come here, though, their women did complain about the village, all right? But they were not born in the village and grew up in the village. They grew up in America or England, okay? And now they're being brought to the village, and they don't particularly like it. That's what I've seen. I really don't talk to too many people about, you know, the women in the villages. I really don't know. I really can't tell.
Because why I ask this question is because it's like, you in Medina Munawwara, and you are at the place where you is the best city in the world, but you do not appreciate the fact that you are staying there. So your gaze is somewhere else, and you wish you were in that modern society and the rest, which is basically, you can say, a lot of Muslims, they suffer from this inferiority complex. They don't have that confidence in our deen, in our Islam. So they've got the best. But because of lack of appreciation or recognizing that you've got this gift, so the gaze tends to go to other places and you tend to think. But if that's the case, then there's no real, it's not like a, yes.
You made a good point that when we went for Hajj in 97, I think it was 97, 98, We went for Hajj, and we also went to Medina. While we were in Mecca, okay, we were staying at Sittin, I think that was the area, and our host was a Bengali imam, okay, who worked. He worked night shift, midnight to the morning, and one night he was going to work, and he came right back in the house and he said, "Well, what happened? How come you didn't go?" He said, "Someone stole my car." "They stole your car here in Mecca? They steal cars in Mecca?" "Yeah." "Yeah. And kids who want to go out joyriding, they'll buy some wine, okay, and they'll steal a car and they'll go and enjoy in the car with the stolen car, and then leave it wherever they want to leave it." And a couple of days later, it was found by the police. All right, with a little bit of damage, but not too much. So that was the thing. They're in Mecca, but they don't understand
the value,
the greatness. Yeah, the greatness of that place. like the Sahaba did, huh? Not too many Sahaba died in Mecca, did they? All right, they understood, you know, how you get a lot of reward for doing good, but if you commit a sin, there's a lot of punishment for that also. And the people don't see that. So it becomes a normal place. And what Abu Hanifa, rahmatullahi alayhi, he said, don't move to Mecca. All right, go there for your Hajj and your Umrah, and then get out of there. All right, keep the respect that you have for it. If you stay there a long time, you lose the respect.
Yes.
If someone playing cricket or something and hits a ball and breaks your window, you start cursing him and this and that, and you forget where you are.
Yes.
You don't even think about it. So it's a place to live now.
Yes.
It's not a special place. So, yeah, that's subhanAllah. So the villages, the people who, like I said, who maybe born in the village and then went to America or went to the West, and they grew up and then they married and they bring their wives back to their village, for the most part, from what I gather, the women don't like it too much. But the men that I know, they understand the importance of raising your children there, keeping your wife there, away from strange men and what have you. So you have to have the value for it. If you value it, then that's the place to be.
Yes, in English, there is the saying, it says, familiarity creates contempt. So that's the more you would, same with a hadith, it's the same with people who have been blessed. It's just what's really outstanding is the friends of Allah, that they more those, like if you take Azad Mu'ana Zakaria rahmatullah alayhi, and all these friends of Allah, the more they get into it, the more they fall in love with Allah and His Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. That's the difference. Anyway, Mufti Saab, we've come to the end of this program. Interesting discussion. I don't think we plan to discuss this either way.
Alhamdulillah. I'll be waiting for your call tomorrow. some of the madrasas are closed.
Okay,
tomorrow.
Okay.
It's not a religious holiday. It's not a religious holiday. I don't know why the madrasas are closed. Government offices and schools, I understand. But I have a class in the morning in a madrasa, and they said for me not to come tomorrow because it will be closed. I said, okay, all right, no problem. So we'll see. I heard the governor or the chief minister of Sindh will be having a fireworks display on his roof tomorrow for 2 hours, shooting off fireworks. This is what one of the Godfather in New York, John Gotti, he's dead now, but he was the leader of the mafia in New York, and he would do that every year. He would have fireworks display on July 4th, American Independence Day. And he would play cat and mouse with the police every year, because he would do it on his roof, and then there was an ordinance, there was a law that you could not, fire these fireworks out. Yeah. So he would go maybe to a neighbor, or he would go to an alleyway or something like that. And every year he would dodge, and people just loved it. But it's a waste of money, and here in Pakistan, there'll be no aerial firing on the 14th of August. So what's the difference between shooting a gun up in the air and these high-powered fireworks? What's the difference? And you have the governor doing it. The governor is firing fireworks, but you can't take a small pistol and fire in the air. Okay? Both are wrong.
Exactly.
Right? But here you have the politicians. They're the ones just doing it themselves.
Yes.
So, like I said, I'll wait for your call tomorrow. We'll see what happens. I'll let you know. Okay. And those horns that they use for the World Cup,
yes,
football, those very loud horns that no one likes, they're on sale here in Pakistan for 14th of August. and it's selling like hotcakes.
Is it?
Mm. Oh my Allah, make dua for me.
let me tell you what it's called, but you have to say it after I say it. After I say it, you've got to repeat it after me. It's called Vuvuzela. Vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela. Vuvuzela.
Yes. Yeah. That's the correct way, a word.
Okay,
for it. That, yeah, it's a local word.
So I know what to curse now.
Yes, that's why you know the enemy's names also, so you can do it. Okay.
Yes.
Let's.
Okay, my brother. Right.
Make dua for us. Assalamu alaikum.
Inshallah. Wa alaikum assalam.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.